were a Liverpool fan, is that right, when you were a child?
Kenny Dalglish and Ian Rush and all those. And yes, I followed Liverpool.
Ole Gunnar Solskjaer, who's been known to be a super sub in the past. On he comes, 17 goals this season.
I was frustrated and I wasn't happy when he put Teddy on. And every time he put me on the bench, I was not very happy. I was going to prove to him I'm better than that.
Sharing it with Solskjaer! With the goal for Manchester United!
Jim Ryan, coach, in the dressing room before the game, he's talking to us. Tonight's going to be special. Yeah, I know, because I'm going to come on and do something special, I said to him. It was just one of those feelings.
He's only gone and won the Champions League for them!
Today, we're heading to the end of the century, 1999. A year that brought us the Euro, the Millennium Bug, the birth of big names like future England stars Declan Rice and Mason Mount, and the passing of others, Sir Ralph Ramsey, actor Oliver Reed, and puppeteer Rod Hull, who bizarrely died on his roof attempting to adjust his aerial to watch that season's Champions League final. In football, it was the summer of Manchester United, FA Cup winners, Premier League winners, and most dramatically of all in that Champions League, victors over Bayern Munich on a night in Barcelona that will never be forgotten. Sheringham, then Solskjaer, we all know how it finished. But how did those, the most miraculous 28 seconds in football history, actually come about? Delighted to say we're joined now by Ole Gunnar Solskjaer himself. Ole, thank you so much for being with us.
My pleasure, James. My pleasure.
As a boy in Norway, how many times did you score the European Cup winner in your head?
I must have scored that more than 1,000 times. You know, I was one of those kids who went to the field by myself. Call it putting pressure on myself. Say, if I score, this one will win the Champions League or European Cup, as it was called back then. Yeah, I must have scored it about 1,000 times. You know, it was a dream of mine. I think it must have been a dream of everyone's to score a winning goal.
It's good that you practiced. I mean, it came in handy in the end.
Yeah, well, the actual goal I scored wasn't some practiced finish or anything. It was just being in the right moment at the right time.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's a big part of it, I guess. I've got so many questions. I don't know how many answers you can bring about what happened in those dramatic final seconds, because, I mean, I'm sure a lot of it was a blur. But let's begin a little bit further back. How was your childhood in Norway?
Well, I was one of these football nerds, as you'd call it. I loved football, played football. Remember the World Cup 82 was the first tournament I can remember. I have all these Panini sticker books from the 81 season is the first one. I remember a fantastic Crystal Palace shirt with the Vince Hilaire and, you know, the white one with the blue and red stripes diagonally. Kristiansund is a small town. On the coast of Norway, you've got to be strong mentally because the weather is not the best. Manchester is very nice compared to Kristiansund. And I think that says everything.
Were you a Liverpool fan, is that right, when you were a child?
I must have been environmentally damaged because, you know, when you when you follow football and you watch, we had the match of the day on Saturday, every Saturday at 3 o'clock or 4 o'clock in Norway, though. And of course, Liverpool were a better team in the 80s. Kenny Dalglish and Ian Rush and all those. And yes, I followed Liverpool, one of these supporters that just followed because they won everything.
Oh, fair enough. Fair enough.
Hard enough to say as a Man United player, but they were a better team in the 80s.
Okay. You, in the meantime, had been building a career with Molde. I hope I'm pronouncing that right. Is it Molde, by the way?
Molde, yeah. I played for my local team, Klausningen, until I was 22. I went to Molde and I made my debut for them when I was 22. So I'm what you call a very late bloomer.
It didn't take long then for your move to Manchester United, because I think you were only, 23 when you went to Old Trafford?
Yeah, it's a season and a half I played for Molde. So those 16, 17 months, not even, maybe 14 months I played for Molde in the league, divided me playing for Klausningen in front of 50 people and then going to Old Trafford playing in front of 60,000 people. So it was a good steep learning curve those 14 months with Åge Hareide, who played for Norwich and Man City.
That's an astonishing leap. Presumably you knew all about Old Trafford from watching the first division.
Of course, I was, as I said, so into football and the size of Old Trafford and Man United was the biggest club in England for me. And when they came calling, it was like, why not? The thing was, I was confident enough in my own abilities because we'd played England on the 21s, 95. And I think some of my teammates played in that one. Phil, Nicky, I think so. Maybe Paul Scholes. Anyway, we drew 2 each with England. I scored and I felt, well, if they play in the top division in England, maybe I can do as well.
You're a confident kind of guy. As you say, you have to be mentally tough growing up where you did.
I'm quietly confident. I'm not one who walks around talking about myself, no. But I do believe in my own abilities. And you have to survive in football. And you had to be strong mentally in those, you know, when you live on an island on the west coast of Norway, you might wake up and it's sunny. You go out in a pair of shorts and when you get to the field or to the football pitch, it's blowing hail. You grow up quickly.
Okay. With all of that, at the age of 23, walking into the United dressing room the first time, do you remember that?
Definitely, yeah. Nervous, of course, very excited, but more nervous, I think, because I'm a shy guy. But I was lucky enough, when I parked on the parking lot, Nicky Butt came to see me and, yeah, you must be the new guy. Coming in, I'll show you the dressing room. And then suddenly you are just one of the lads again. That's the beauty of being in a football dressing room, because it's just normal lads who happen to be good at playing football.
There was a great spirit, I imagine, in that team. There couldn't have been, given the way that you had this incredible record of coming back against adversity as a group. But who in particular were you friends with?
It was a special group, definitely. You know, the class of 92, and they've grown up together. For me, coming as an outsider, they always welcomed you, but it was always the foreigners. We stuck a little bit together. So me and Jordi Cruyff became very good friends. Hmm. Jordi came at the same time as me to the club. We actually competed for more or less the same position, but it didn't matter. My girlfriend, his girlfriend, and the two of us really clicked and we became very good friends.
Excellent. So that first season, I mean, United go and win the title. Is it when you'd first signed on, you weren't expecting to play very much in the kind of opening weeks, months of the season? Is that fair?
What you expect, you know, I think Sir Alex didn't expect me to play as much. We had a meeting when I signed, the day I signed, we had fish and chips in the canteen or in the cafe at Old Trafford. And I remember being nervous, and he said to me, just use the first half a season to get used to English football. After Christmas, you can maybe get into the first team, but before then, you play for the reserves. Obviously, I listened to him, and I think, well, I might have to show you that I'm better than that. Maybe luckily, Andy Cole had an operation. It was lack of forwards, and that's football for you. Another, if someone gets injured, you have to grab your chance, and I did get a chance, and I just loved it.
It took you 6 minutes. Your debut as a substitute was against Blackburn Rovers,
yeah.
25th of August 1996, and 6 minutes in, you've already scored. Of course, coming in off the bench and scoring was something you did an awful lot of. That first season, 18 Premier League goals in 33 appearances, 25 of which were starts.
Yeah.
And you rapidly become a massive favourite.
Yeah, well, I could have, maybe should have scored 3 that day. And I think maybe that would have raised the expectations too much. So 1 goal in the debut, that's enough. Turning around after scoring, seeing Eric Cantona come and celebrating, I think that was a big shock and a, wow, welcome to England, and here you are. I used to adore Eric. Of course, he was a catalyst of the team. He was leader of the team. His charisma, everything about Eric was something you looked up to. And suddenly he comes and almost thanks me for scoring the goal and saving a point.
That's amazing. Well, it was a dream start, and the success kind of continued right on. I mean, the season we're going to talk about, impossible to better it. You win the title, you win the FA Cup and the Champions League, which we're going to be discussing. The curious thing is that season almost began with you leaving the club. Why was that?
Alan Sugar and Martin Edwards had made a deal. I think it was 5.5 million. Tottenham wanted to sign me because the season before, I didn't do particularly well. We didn't win the league, didn't win any cups. So it was a disappointing one. I think Sir Alex wanted to rebuild the squad. We signed Dwight York, obviously. But he called me in. He said to me that the club have agreed with Tottenham if I wanted to go, fine. But if I stayed, I would be playing quite a lot.
Hmm.
But please don't tell anyone he's tried to convince me to stay at the club, because that he probably went overstepped his mark. It was probably a deal that and finances that the club needed. But luckily, I didn't. So I'm stubborn. You know, I'm stubborn as well. And I really enjoyed it at Manchester. And I felt, okay, if you promise me I'm going to be a part of the squad, I'll still train, practice, and I'll show you I can play more than you think.
How did you feel when he said that the club were ready to do a deal to send you to Spurs?
It's a strange feeling because, you know, the club wanted to sell me or needed to sell me or wanted to. I don't know which one is the right one. But when the manager says he wants me to stay, there's no doubt because I wanted to stay. So it's one of those, you've got to believe in yourself. You've got to trust yourself in football. And when he said he believed in me and he wanted me to stay, that was my, because I'd signed a 7-year deal the year before. Because after my first season, they offered me a new contract, signed for 7 years. And then I always believed I'm going to stay in Manchester for the rest of my footballing career.
So that season, which was to end so spectacularly, how much was the European Cup or the Champions League, how much was that a quest after the semi-finals and the quarterfinals in the previous seasons?
You sense it, and you know, with Sir Alex, that was his holy grail. He needed to win the European Cup. That was the big thing for him. He'd won the double a few times. I think he'd conquered whatever he needed to conquer apart from the European Cup. And you can sense every team talk, every team selection, maybe the game before, because you don't really want to play the league game before the Champions League game, because that's the most important one is the Champions League European Cup game. So it was something special. And Wednesday nights at Old Trafford under the floodlights, they were amazing, amazing nights.
No British team had won the European title since, you know, the ban in the mid-80s. So
we lost the semi-final in 96-97.
Yep.
And I think that's when Eric decided, well, he was going to pack it in. I don't think he was happy with his own performances in those two games against Dortmund. And it was a hard blow to take the year.
Monaco the following season.
Yeah, quarter-final against Monaco, which was disappointing. And then it was the most important thing.
So there's a quote from David Beckham around that period where he said that Champions League was a bit like learning football all over again. Why was it so different?
European football away from home. You know, we played Juventus every year. It seemed like they were unbelievable. What a team they were. We felt that we played against men and we were boys. You know, when we used to lose 1-0 against them, scored a goal, what they needed, and just saw the game out. Definitely the English football with, call it the energy and passion and like end-to-end stuff. That wasn't going to hack it in Europe. And we went into Europe playing more often than not 4-5-1, 4-3-3 instead of our normal 4-4-2. The gaffer, he wanted a clean sheet away from home. And it was a bit of a different mindset. It was more tactical, definitely.
Every year, as you say, Juventus would be your opponents. And again, 98-99, there they are waiting in the semi-final. Before that, you have to get through a pretty awesome group. Barcelona, Bayern Munich and Bromby, which you battle your way through, scoring a bunch of goals. Then you get Inter in the quarterfinals.
Yeah, that was with Simeone and Zamorano, Pirlo.
Great on Inter the side, yeah.
It was an unbelievable team as well.
And then Juventus in the semi-finals for the third season in the row, which you have a ringside seat for, I presume, because you didn't get to play in that.
You know, that season that I played the two semis against Arsenal in the FA Cup. I played against Sheffield Wednesday in March or April, but I didn't play a lot. I had loads of injuries. My knee injury, I had a bad knee, missed a few games, and I was on the bench more or less the whole Champions League campaign. I started the first one against Barcelona at Old Trafford. I remember that. That was a 3-3 draw. And I think I came on a couple of times against Brøndby. I don't think I played anymore in the group, and I didn't play a second in the quarters or semis.
You're sat there on the bench watching then?
Yeah.
What was that like? Particularly the second leg in Turin, that great Juve side who you felt were like men against your boys. You got Inzaghi, you got Zidane, Edgar Davids, the whole lot, the Paolo Montero. What was it like to watch that comeback?
No, it was strange. Or it was, you know, 2-0 down. We were 1-0 down for the whole, more or less the whole game at Old Trafford as well in Manchester.
Right.
Giggs, he scored towards the end, and I remember there was arguments in the dressing room half-time and after the game, and no one was happy. We went to a hotel after, you know, because we were a dressing room full of winners. That's not good enough for us. We needed a better result to take to Turin. And after about 10 minutes, we were 2-0 down. Inzaghi, I'm pretty sure he's born with a deflection, because, you know, the goals he scored. I love his mentality in front of goal. And one of the goals, he hits Yapstam down in the, and it goes over Peter. And 2-0 down, you think, wow, we're out, because you've got no chance. And I think they were close to a 3-0 as well. But then when you, in the old days, when away goals count, when we score one goal, I think Roy Keane scored the first one with a header. And then suddenly they're on the back foot, because now we just need one goal and we're through. And suddenly they're nervous. A strange game, but we had the mentality. We had some leaders out there, Roy Keane especially, but Yapstam, Ronnie Johnson, Coley and Yorkie were unbelievable. Bex is just fantastic. And obviously Giggs, he scored at Old Trafford. We had a team full of winners, and Peter at the back. So I think they're a dying breed these days, these winners. So when we changed that, to be on the bench, you just, we need a goal. I want to come on, of course, as a striker. You want to come on every second. You want to play. But I did understand, and we knew more or less what the starting 11 was.
I was in Italy through that period. And I remember one thing about United in particular was that you terrified the Italians. The Italians might have seemed intimidating to you, but the mentality, the never say die attitude of United, as you say, get a goal back against them, and all of a sudden it would spook the heck out of them. That was something that happened so much with that United team, and particularly that season. Why was it, do you think, that group was so good at Fergie time?
I think, you know, it was a group of men / boys that the gaffer had gathered, more or less all winners, no one happy just to be there and be part of it. And of course, he was the leader, and he never accepted anything but 100%. You could win 3-0 and he can hammer you, because he was never happy. He was so down to the detail when you had to push ourselves, because he knew we were playing against these top teams with top players, with top managers in Europe. And to win his holy grail, we had to be focused, 100% focused every single second, and even training sessions. There was times where he was going to sending us in because we don't train well enough. It was a special dressing room.
Did that feel, that victory and the way that the campaign was going, did it feel like you were coming of age then on the European scene?
I think so, yeah. I think we, you know, we'd met them so many times, and we'd come short every time against Juventus. But then when you beat them, because we felt they were the best team. Hmm. And I think everyone did, really, with Carlo Ancelotti was the manager. So they had amazing players, amazing managers, history that we didn't have the history against them. We could only watch you on Football Italia on days and watch them. Of course, that was, for us, intimidating meeting those teams. I remember playing, that was the 96-97 season. I played at Stadio dell'Alpi. You just felt you couldn't get any second on the ball. We couldn't create chances. They were superior to us. But that game, I think that changed that.
Absolutely. The other element of the final, which was so remarkable, was you coming off the bench and kind of turning things around. And you used to do that so often. How were you so effective at being an impact substitute, and how difficult is it to come off the bench and immediately make a difference?
It's not easy, but I think coming back from my days as a football lover back home in Kristiansund, I was never a complainer. I was always half full cup of guy. I always try to see the positive things. And if you come on, say, after 70 minutes, you've got 20 minutes to do 90 minutes work when the other players have been running for 70 minutes, like getting tired. And it's a team game, and you can make such an impact. And I did so many times that I felt actually this might be my role in the team, in an important team. And I felt privileged to be at Man United with these players. When after the chat in the summer of 98, it's more or less that I accepted to be a part of Sir Alex Ferguson's team. It's his team. I don't play for me. I play for him, and I play for the club. And if he wants me 90 minutes, fine. If he wants me 10, fine. I wanted 90. And every time he put me on the bench, I was not very happy. And I was going to prove to him I'm better than that. Mm. And then I came on and scored. And he knew that. So when he put me on the bench, he got a motivated player. If he put some of the other, call it the starters, on the bench, I think they were sulking a little bit more than me.
Yeah, so it's about being positive and not allowing the frustration. Say it's sitting through against Bayern Munich, for example, seeing the team struggling to create chances for that long in the biggest game of all.
I was frustrated and I wasn't happy when he put Teddy on, because Teddy's a fantastic player, a great friend of mine. But that season I'd scored 17 or 18. I can't remember, 16, 17 goals. And Teddy
scored. I'll just interrupt you to say you scored 18 and eight of them came off the bench. Four of them in the space of a quarter of an hour against Nottingham Forest when you came on. Just insane.
Special 12 minutes. But then I did have a knack of finding space when the space is opened up. And, you know, in the final, at halftime, the gaffer is talking to Teddy a little bit. And I probably sense it there and then that he's going to put Teddy on before me, which now I understand, because I'd been injured for a while and I wasn't really, really fit. But still, it didn't make me happy when Teddy came on, and I was very eager to come on and improve myself. Coming back to about 10 days before we played Tottenham to win the league, Teddy started. I was on the bench. At halftime, we drew one each. We needed to win. I still remember Sir Alex's team talk that we just keep on playing, boys. Keep doing what you're doing and you'll get a goal. But if you don't, I just put Ollie on with 15 minutes to go, because he'll get us the goal. And I remember I sat up, straightened my back, and I felt like the best player in the world and most important player in the world. Wow. Andy Cole came on and he scored after about 5 minutes or something. And we won 2-1. I didn't have to come on. But after that game, I was probably the happiest man alive, because what he'd said at halftime, and that was his skill. What a man manager, and what the time to say the right things if you listen to him. I was one of the few that listened, maybe.
Ollie, that also put a huge amount of pressure on you, though.
No, that just gave me confidence. Of course, as a striker, you're 1-0 down, you come on, and you can only win. It's a win-win situation as a sub, as a striker, coming on. Because they'd played 80 minutes and hadn't scored. So if I come on and score, that proved my point. If we were 2-0 up, he'd make a change. 1-0 up, that was the worst score for a striker to come on, because he'd never put me on 1-0. So when we were winning 1-0, I'm hoping for a 2-0. When we were 1-0 down, I feel, I'm going to come on here.
Well, you had a lot of the final being 1-0 down, thinking, I'm going to come on here.
Yeah, and that's why you mentally prepare yourself to come on. And that's the main thing as a sub. You have to warm up and don't get this, you know, sometimes you don't warm up. You only see some players just sit there and stretch. And then you need your engine to start. And then they get stiff and you blow up. And so I learned that you had to warm up properly and then ready to come on as soon as.
Okay, so the 26th of May, 1999, you're at the sharp end of a pretty extraordinary 11-day whirl. As you mentioned, on the 16th, you'd beaten Spurs to take the title over Arsenal.
Yep.
And then 22nd of May, only 4 days before the final at Barcelona, you beat Newcastle 2-0 in the FA Cup final.
Yeah.
And now you're in Barcelona, waking up on the morning of the final. You've barely had time to catch your breath.
It was lovely. That's the best thing, because you get into a rhythm as a team and as a squad. We knew what we were doing, playing, resting, recovering, playing, resting, recovering, preparing, getting ready. So we were used to it.
How was that day? How do you deal with all the hours of waiting, you know, when you wake up on the morning of the final?
I was rooming with Jaap Stam. Mm-hmm. And big lad, he was snoring as well, so I couldn't sleep in the afternoon. So I remember ringing my best mate, my best man in our wedding, asking him if he was going to watch the game, because something big was going to happen to me. I was only on the bench, but you have to make sure that you watch the full game, because this is going to be big. But he worked as a nurse, so he was going to have a night shift. So I asked him to get someone to step in for him for an hour so he can watch the full game, because it was just one of these mental things that I had this feeling.
Wait, you woke up with that feeling?
I'm a positive kind of guy. So I always, I was preparing for good things to happen. But this day, it felt special. It did. And I remember Jim Ryan, assistant manager or coach, in the dressing room before the game. He's talking to us, three or four of us, and tonight's going to be special. Yeah, I know, because I'm going to come on and do something special, I said to him. And it was just one of those feelings.
I mean, I kind of know what you mean. Sometimes you almost know where you are on the map.
Yeah.
and you got a sense of what's coming up now. But how often did you get an inkling like that?
Now, as I said, I was positive all the time, but I never had that strong a feeling. I had in the World Cup in 98, we're just digressing a little bit, talking about something else. I was rooming with Kjetil Rekdal. He, on the day that we played Brazil, that's a big day for Norway, we need to win. He's on the loo with the door open, and I can't imagine this scene again, but he shouts at me, "Ollie, I've just seen it. We'll win today. I'll score a penalty in the last minute." And that's exactly what happened. Wow. We won 2-1. He got a penalty in the last minute and he scored a winning goal. And that's probably formed me as well. And you have to be positive to make these things happen.
So you were probably on the toilet in the hotel room in Barcelona. Oh. Realize it's going to be... You've had an interesting track record in roommates, by the way. What was it like sharing with Jaap Stam? And was he the most challenging of people to share with?
No, not at all. You know, me and Jaap, I went well with the Dutch. So Jaap, Ruud, Edwin, Jordi Cruyff, good mates. And Jaap was a lovely, lovely man. You know, when you get to know people, you watch them on telly and you think, wow, I don't want to meet him. But he's a fantastic man, Jaap, and his family. We had good fun. We had loads of fun. I think we almost killed the kit man, Albert Morgan, once when we jumped out of the dressing room because he was collecting kits. And it was just, we had loads of fun. But we were also serious. He was playing in the final, obviously. So I didn't want to wake him up when I couldn't sleep. So I was on the balcony most of the afternoon, getting a tan.
Nice, nice. Did you feel the tension?
It was a special build-up to the game. You know, we flew Concorde from...
Did you?
Yeah, from London to Barcelona. That was horrible, absolutely horrible. I was almost seasick. I had to throw up in the toilet. It was the worst feeling ever.
Why? Just because the plane moved around so much? Or
yeah, what? It was so quick and you just felt you lost all sense of gravity and you just, like, the whole stomach turned. So we knew something was... It was a special feeling. It would have been Sir Matt's 90th birthday. His son and his daughter were in the stands, seeing the white doves flying over Nou Camp. I think we all had a feeling that he was up there watching.
And you had tens of thousands of the United supporters who've made the journey as well.
90,000 fans in the Nou Camp here.
When you're on a run like that, is the feeling more, well, we've had a good season, whatever, we've done a double, league and cup, or is it, as stupid as this may sound, if we don't win this part, it's going to ruin everything?
Yeah, I think so. I think we knew that we had to win this. At one point, we had to win this. We were used to winning the league. That was just the norm. That was what we did. It could have easily been a season with nothing. In the semi-final in the FA Cup, when Peter Schmeichel saves the penalty from Dennis Bergkamp in the 91st minute on one each, we've got a man sent off. That would have been us dead and buried. They would have won the league because of that mental edge that they would have got on us. And then I'm pretty sure we couldn't have turned the final round if that had happened. So football is such a game of fine margins. So you have to believe and you have to have that team spirit. And we did. Winning the league, of course we had a party. Winning the FA Cup, of course we had a party. It was none of these sports science and you have to sleep and get the rest. We team bonding.
And meetings over fish and chips with the gaffer.
Yeah. We did get more and more professional and we were an unbelievable bunch of lads, men in that dressing room, I have to say.
The 1999 UEFA Champions League final between Manchester United and Bayern Munich was a magical night in Barcelona. Sir Alex Ferguson's side were chasing a treble, having secured the Premier League and the FA Cup. Bayern and their coach Ottmar Hitzfeld were Bundesliga champions and still had the German Cup final to play. These two had already met twice in the group stages, both games ending in draws. Something had to give in the Camp Nou.
Manchester United are without the suspended Roy Keane and Paul Scholes. Cruel on both players. David Beckham in central midfield. Peter Schmeichel captaining United in his final game. Ottmar Hitzfeld named Bayern Munich's team 2 days ago. 38-year-old Lothar Matthäus looking for his first Champions League triumph. Battering Ram striker Carsten Janka has 19 goals this season. And there are the substitutes. Teddy Sheringham scored in the FA Cup final.
So Bayern were also chasing a treble, and you'd met them in the group, and both games had finished in draws. This time around, though, 6 minutes into the game, they go ahead. Mario Basler.
Bayern Munich with Janka here looking to make progress, and that is going to be a free kick for a challenge by Ronny Jonsson. is Basler to hit it, and Basler to score! What a blow for Manchester United within 6 minutes.
You're sat on the bench at this point, are you?
Yeah, I can probably more or less see the ball go in down in the corner. Peter's behind the wall and he just strokes it in bottom corner. It's almost like we haven't woken up yet. I remember they played a long ball in behind and Ronnie Johnson and Carsten Janke just ran into each other. It probably is a free kick.
Cue bedlam among the Munich fans. Something wrong with the wall here. It's expertly hit.
A badly lined up wall. Peter has to take the blame for that one.
Mm. You're on the bench as Sir Alex has gone with... Well, there are some changes to the lineup because there's no Scholes or Keane.
Yeah, no, that was a big, big thing for us. You know, we'd had this engine room of Scholes and Keane or Nicky Butt, those three. Maybe sometimes Ronnie Johnson played in there, but we had David Beckham and Ryan Giggs, wide right, wide left. If you look at our goals, I think 70% is a cross from David Beckham or Ryan Giggs. So that is a big, big thing. Not just that we lost the two centre midfielders, but we end up with David as a centre midfielder, Ryan Giggs as a right winger, because Jesper Blomqvist had played really well and he played left wing. So we'd really lost like the core of the team.
What did Sir Alex say before the game? Did he say anything to you about his plans for you, or you know, did he try and soften the blow of you being on the bench again?
No, he before big games, I think he hated leaving players on the bench. So I remember him before Champions League games and big games, he always used to mention that, I hope you become managers one day because this is the most horrible feeling ever. I want all 20 of you to start, but I have to pick 11. And you just got to be ready. That's what he said, more or less.
Is it the worst feeling in football?
Yeah, it's horrible because, you know, you want to give good players, good people the chance to play in big games. And sometimes you've got to disappoint them and let them down. But I think everyone understands it's only 11 and you pick the team that you feel is the best to start. But I think he also had in the back of his mind, you know, I can come on and make an impact. Same with Teddy.
And what an advantage for him to have a player who accepted so positively the role and was such a genius at coming on and changing games. All right, so you're sat on the bench and Bayern Munich are a goal up. And United, is it fair to say, playing well, dominating, but not really creating any big chances? And then at half-time, how was the mood there? Was it an angry mood?
There's rescue work to be done in the second half. The referee will blow for half-time now. Bayern Munich ahead early, and that lead not often threatened in truth. The boss has some thinking to do. Mario Basler with the goal.
I think it was just a disappointed mood. And of course, Sir Alex, he talks about, remember, in cup finals and European cup finals, you have to, if you come out as a loser, you can just walk past that trophy without touching it. So it was a subdued dressing room, I think. But he was always good at, he was a master of finding either the right words or not saying anything or being angry or finding the right moods. We knew we had to go for it. I don't think we had a shot on target the whole game until 81st minute or something, 82nd
yeah,
minute.
Your header.
Yeah, my header,
I think
yeah.
That was the first actual shot on target, which is remarkable.
We had a massive chance. Jesper Blomqvist, he there was a cross from maybe David Beckham, I can't remember. Jesper from about 5 yards, he over the bar, I remember that chance. But we never hit the target, so you can't score then, can you? And they, as you said, we had the ball, we couldn't create chances. They counterattacked, created massive, massive chances.
Alex Ferguson does have striker options on the bench, but there's defensive work to do here. Janka, Johnson got something on it. Oh, and just for a moment you wondered if the angle still existed for Janka to turn that in. Curled in again, Kufor. And you can't quite reach it. Janka, Effenberg, big opportunity. Oh, it wouldn't quite sit down for the lob he was looking for. And Schmeichel in his final Manchester United game with a vital save. Scholl. Oh, that's delicious. Oh, Mehmet Scholl, so close to putting the game, you'd feel, out of United's reach. Well, only the woodwork kept Manchester United alive there.
We were lucky to be in the game, to be honest.
I don't know what it was like on the bench, but you have that sensation of minutes ticking by and a chance. United have finally got to the final, but the chance is just disappearing second by second.
Giggs and Blomqvist! Nearly for Manchester United. Blomqvist is coming off. And on comes Teddy Sheringham. Fresh from his goal in the FA Cup final against Newcastle United. And Ole Gunnar Solskjaer stretching and looks like being prepared for an introduction.
10 minutes to go, it's still 0-0, and he finally sends you on. Do you remember that?
Yeah, I remember it.
Ole Gunnar Solskjaer, who's been known to be a super sub in the past, on he comes, 17 goals this season.
I've seen, you know, them 10 minutes I've come on, I've seen them right. Once, not twice now. I actually watched the game this summer with my daughter. It just came on MUTV. But until then, I'd watched them 10 minutes once. I've seen the goal, obviously, hundreds of times. But I just, when I came on, I felt I can see myself running springy. My legs looked sharp. I was just eager to get 90 minutes work in them 10 minutes.
Mm. Well, you immediately force Ole Khan into a diving save with, as you mentioned, the first shot on target.
It's the United corner taken by Beckham. Not too far away. Neville looks to keep it alive. Solskjaer! Almost made an instant impact.
They're still creating chances, but the game completely opens up. Was there a sensation that the tide might finally be turning?
Yeah, you know, the same time I came on, Lothar Matthäus came off. I think he was tired, and I think that's another big, big thing. His experience, losing that, I think that helped us. And the spaces opened up, and we just threw caution to the wind. If you lose 1 or 2-0, it doesn't matter in a final, does it?
Yeah, the chances are coming, but they're also going without United finally at the back of the net. And now 90 minutes are up. And there's the number of United players who talk about seeing them carrying the cup down, ready for the presentation, with the Bayern colours already on it.
A lot of anxious faces and glances at watches. Peter Schmeichel wants a fantasy finish to his United career. It isn't happening at the moment. The time is ebbing away from Manchester United in there. Quest for a famous treble.
They're winning 1-0, 90 minutes played, but oh, what's this?
United need something and fast. Beckham. That's quite good. And it's Gary Neville who turned up on the left-hand side looking to get the cross, and it's a corner kick to Manchester United in stoppage time.
United have a corner, and Peter Schmeichel comes running upfield.
Yeah, we had nothing to lose. So Peter's a big lad. He'd scored before for United in the European Cup, UEFA Cup, and he used to play outfield, you know, day before a game and stuff. So he's a decent player. He can read the fly to the ball. So that, I think that caused a little bit of mayhem. He gets up in the second phase of that corner, Giggsy fluffs a shot. Teddy's on the right spot and he scores.
They've got that one away, have they, as well? Giggs plans it back in. Sheringham has equalised for Manchester United. Saved.
Is he off? Is he not off? We're all celebrating, but I'm celebrating thinking, wow, I can play 15 minutes times two, so half an hour extra time in a Champions League final. I'm going to learn a lot in these 30 minutes.
Right, but you were cruelly denied that half an hour by your own goal. I was going to ask actually at that point, if at any part of your mind is thinking, now we get the winner, it's all about extra time.
I don't think any of us thought we'll score another one. I was, in my head, I was ready for 30 minutes extra time, definitely. But Dennis Irvine plays a long ball down in the channel, in the corridor.
This is straight from kickoff, basically, to what, 25 seconds later?
Yeah, and then we win. They play a long ball. I think they're deflated, obviously, because they've been winning all the game. And the ball goes out to Dennis, and I'm starting centrally, but I run down to the corner flag, and Dennis plays a good pass. After 10 minutes, your legs are flying, and Samuel Kufur had been, he'd been playing for 90 minutes, so he's tired. I'm not as quick as that, but I ran past him. I get a step over, try to cross it, and we get a corner kick.
Irwin to knock it long. Solskjaer, bright since he came on. Looking to take on Kufur, that will be another corner kick.
Then, of course, David is sprinting to go and take the corner. So he must have believed that we're going to win this more than I did.
Because time is, what's this, the 92nd minute of 93? So any moment the referee could blow.
Yeah. And Beck's obviously is the best crosser of a ball I've ever seen. Samuel Kufuri, he grabs hold of me. He's one of the best man markers you can play against. But the ball is flown in towards the near post, and we were more towards the back post. And he loses the sight of me, but he follows the ball, and Teddy goes and wins the header. And in that moment, he lets go of me, and I'm free. So Teddy flicks it on, and luckily, I've got a big toe.
One last corner, perhaps, to survive. Beckham to swing this one in again. Sheringham wins it. Solskjaer with the goal for Manchester United. He's only gone and won the Champions League for them.
You stick out a leg, and yep, the ball flies into the net, and then utter chaos, limbs, as they would say these days. Do you remember all that happening, or is that from watching it back and kind of reconstructing it?
I think it's from reconstructing. I think it's from watching it back. You know, I think I remember, was I offside or not? Just looking over the shoulder. No, he's not waited. The flag's not up. I think so. And just thinking, Mario Basler, he slid on his knees. Why don't I do that? So I slid on my celebrate. I never ever celebrated like this. And then suddenly Andy Cole is strangling me, and Phil Neville is there. And they were sat on the bench half a second ago.
The two substitutes have made a massive impact. Sheringham, who got the first, flicks it on, and Solskjaer reacted very, very fast to flick that into the roof of the net. And Manchester United, incredibly, with two goals in stoppage time, are on the verge of becoming champions of Europe for the first time since 1968.
Yeah, there's a photo of you, and yeah, there's the whole crowd. And I think Teddy, well, in the shot I've seen, Teddy Sheringham's got you in a headlock, which can never be much fun. And you've got your fists up, your mouth's open in this scream of joy, but your eyes are just tightly, I mean, they're just shut, and you're just like in another place completely.
Yeah, this is what you dream of. This is what you do. Or that's what you dream of from. That's the feeling I wanted since I was a kid, scoring those goals, celebrating by yourself. Yes, we were. So maybe all them times I've pushed myself to say, if you score this one, you'll win the European League, your European Cup. You know, strange things happen, and there's more things between heaven and earth. So we more or less forced that to happen.
Yeah, to put this in perspective, I asked a stats man, a guy from Opta, about this. He says, okay, basically, you had two goals after the 90th from corners. So goals from corners are only converted about 2-3% of the time. To score two of those in a row at any time of the match is remarkable. Yeah. But to do two of those in stoppage time of the Champions League final, and to win the treble with it, is it just, as they say, you could not write it, because everyone would laugh you out of the cinema.
Exactly. No, it's but you have to believe, you have to be positive, like a quote from Jim Carrey in Dumb and Dumber. So you're telling me there is a chance? when she said there was one in a million chance.
One in
that
a million, yeah.
People want to date him. So one in a million, maybe not even one in a million that could happen. But we made it happen. And I think that's due to all them little circumstances, that dressing room being so tight, Sir Alex being so, call it hard, but focused, determined, that group having stayed together for a while. It just all came together, this, and it would have been Sir Matt's 90th birthday.
What a game. What a final. And it's over. Manchester United, in a script nobody really could ever dare to write, have won. Well, as long as football is played, they will talk about this final. It's a night to go into Manchester United folklore forever. Well, joyous scenes. It's going to be some party for Manchester United in Barcelona tonight. There's Bobby Charlton, who starred in the 1968 win.
Football, eh? Bloody hell. What, from the moments that followed, what stays in your mind particularly? What flashes are there?
You remember celebrating with three fingers up with the fans. I was dragged out to do an interview. I regret doing that interview because I lost, you know, that celebration with the boys.
Right.
was maybe a couple of minutes only, but still, those are precious, precious, precious moments. And I remember walking in. I was one of the first to come into the dressing room after, and Sir Alex comes there and he greets me with a bottle of champagne. I've got a great picture of us two. And I remember thinking, you deserve this, Sir Alex. We did it for him. I felt that he deserved to win this. And he was so, you can see the joy in his eyes.
Oh, that's lovely. There's a quote from Pat. You know what you're saying about those special moments with your teammates when you're celebrating? There's a quote from Paolo Rossi after the 82 World Cup final.
Yeah.
Where he says, when the final whistle blew, he felt this enormous sadness because he knew this was the greatest moment of his career and it was already over.
Yeah. No, you know, I didn't have that feeling. I had an unbelievable euphoric feeling. And I think we all believed we were going to go on to win more of these because this team, we were a young team and we could only get better. But sadly, we couldn't do that again.
Well, you did have other triumphs. Although actually you did get together and do it all again. You had a reunion match, no?
Yeah. That's not long ago. That was a great feeling, you know, meeting the boys again, meeting the Bayern players. Fair play to them for turning up. You know, it must be a sore memory for them losing that game, but they came there for charity and we had a fantastic time. Yapstam, it looked like Yapstam went back 20 years because he wanted to kick all of them again.
Yeah, that was in his DNA, I guess. You mentioned before the worst feeling in football is leaving players out as a manager, but I don't think there's much worse than being a Bayern Munich player on the final whistle of a game which you were about to win the Champions League. Kafur famously beating the turf in despair. I read reports that Janka was physically sick when he saw the goals back later on TV. Basler didn't collect his runners-up medal. Do you ever wonder about how close they came and how close you came to being on the other side of that sliding door?
Yeah, of course, even with that whole 11 days, as you said, but that's in the semi-final when Peter Schmeichel saved that penalty from Bergkamp. The chances, you know, when they hit the crossbar. It's one of those things that you don't really believe it when you read it. It's a script that's been written because there were so many margins and things that went for us in that final, in the semi-final, in the game against last league game against Tottenham when Arsenal could win the league. Of course, Tottenham didn't want Arsenal to win the league either. So I don't know if we were lucky in that respect. Maybe they just played 90%. So many things.
It's just incredible, though. At the end of it, though, Ollie, you were part of the most remarkable Champions League final finale ever and an incredible group of players. And just, I mean, a place in the sport's history that, even for all the dreams you had in fields in Norway, I don't think you could ever have imagined.
No, no chance. Absolutely no chance. You know, you can dream of winning the league. You can dream of winning a cup, European cup, whatever. But all three together in the way we did it, 11 days. It will never be done again to win it in 11 days. There are good teams around and Champions League is a tournament that's made dreams come true.
Very nicely put. Never more than in 99, and all because of your big toe.
It's a big toe. And I heard some, because I was just negotiating a boot deal with Nike around about that time. They never got round to sending me boots and getting the deal done. So I played with some old Adidas Copa Mundials.
Nice.
Or World Cups. When the guy heard in Norway that Man United won and I scored the winning goal, he was looking forward to seeing the picture with Nike boots on. And they were blacked out Adidas boots. So he got the sack, apparently, the guy who should have. So unfortunately, that goal cost a few others. Yeah, that's the world. It has to balance out.
It does indeed. It does indeed. Ollie, that's been magnificent. Thank you so much. You have to go through this so often because people always ask you about it. And actually, what did your daughter say when she saw that final minutes? What was her reaction?
Our football was different back then. I think that's what she says. Because now with the tactical, there's so much more tactical. And, you know, end-to-end stuff and all the chances they had. And there was no patterns of play or nothing. So, yeah, she did mention football back then was different.
But she must have been impressed with her old man.
Yeah, well, I hope so. I'm proud of my kids and I hope they're proud of what their dad achieved. But I think that, I hope that is an example for everyone, not just my kids, but I'm from Kristiansund, blown little town in Norway on the west coast, and I've been able to achieve these and experience these. That's why, as a manager, you want other players to have this feeling. Coaching the boys under 14s team now for a little while, is you see the dreams in their eyes, that you just want to encourage them.
Ollie, you've been a real gent. Thank you so much for that.
My pleasure. It's always nice to relive these memories.